going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
And anything that we post about Trae Young gets instant, and like he's a player that everybody loves him or hates him. Like there's nobody who's just ambivalent about Trae Young. And so anything we do about Michael Porter Jr. or Trae Young, people lose their minds over on both ends of the spectrum, right? It's just he's one of those guys who is very polarizing. And so for me, I am still on the fence. I think the Steph Curry comparisons are ludicrous. I think Steph is a once in a generation type player, and I've watched the tape and I've seen what Trae Young can do, and he's open the moment he steps past half court, and I get that, and his assist numbers are fantastic. He's not a ball hog, which is really good to see, but I'm very concerned with how he played the last 2 months of the season. Amen. Defense is keyed on him. They took him completely out of his game, and he's got size issues. I mean, 6'2", yeah, 6'2" for a normal person is good size. But 6'2" for an NBA point guard is something that when you're not super athletic, like a 6'2" Derrick Rose driving to the rim, there's no issues there. But when you're 6'2", and it's about creating space, it's about getting your shot off, there are only a few players who can make that happen, Steph Curry being one of them, that I just, you know, we actually did this poll, is Trae Young closer to Jimmer Fredette, or is he closer to Steph Curry? And I think either extreme is wrong. I don't think he's going to be Steph. I don't think he's going to be Jimmer Fredette either. But at the same time, I don't think he's worth taking the second pick on, or seventh pick on, rather. And my other concern for the Bulls, if you take Trae Young, where does he fit in your rotation? Where does he fit? And does he truly make your team better having him there? I don't think he does.
I agree 100%. He's too small. It just comes down to that. And the Bulls are one of the few teams that I think where in a right, it's the right situation where that he could potentially succeed because Dunn can guard any one or three, the one to three. That you have a point guard that is so good defensively that he can stop twos and threes and guard twos and threes that you can kind of get away with it. Kind of like how the Bulls did with Heinrich guarding a more difficult backcourt player and Gordon being the shooting guard. But I agree with you that the NBA is kind of moving away from these, I think. And there's just a massive difference between 6'3 and 6'. I see Trae Young, I think he's 5'11. I think he's closer to 5'11.
I know he measured at 6'2.
In shoes, though.
Like that's a little high.
In kiss shoes.
Yeah,
in kiss shoes. No, I talked to, who was it who I talked to? One of the writers who was there. Who was 5'10", and they said they're pretty sure if he takes his shoes off, he's closer to 6 foot or 5'11". So I'm telling you, he's too small to play, and I agree with you there.
I do think Trae Young would be a very good fit with Chris Dunn. I do not think he'd be a very good fit with Zach LaVine.
True.
And so the Bulls, what they do on June 21st has to be with – you have to keep in mind what they're going to do July 1st, right? Because you have to always keep in mind with free agency. And I think they have every intent to re-sign Zach LaVine to a long-term deal, and I think they will, and they're going to. It may take the second or third week, it may even get into August before that deal is done. But at the same time, they've got to draft what's best for the team, and I know there's a constant debate about need versus best player, but if you take a guy like Mikal Bridges, is his ceiling a little bit lower? Probably. The floor is a lot higher, and you plug in Mikal Bridges immediately. And the thing is, again, we talk about Zach LaVine, is Zach LaVine is a very good player in certain respects. He's a very poor defender.
No, I agree.
And you cannot have a very poor defender at your three and a very poor defender at your two, because you'll get killed on the wing in today's game. And so Mikal Bridges is an elite perimeter defender, and so you essentially get Bridges in, and you then fill a massive hole that you'd have if you drafted Trae Young.
agree 100% with everything you said, and you're absolutely right on. Potential free agent targets, there's a name I wanted to throw out at you that I did on Waddle and Sylvie, and I was pretty much hammered for it, but he's a kid I like. Did you hear this one yet? Because I'm going to surprise you with it.
No, let's share this one with you.
25 years old, shot 38% from three last year, 1.5 steals per game, 13 points per game in the Western Conference. Played with Detroit, L.A. last year, Contavious Caldwell-Pope, unrestricted free agent.
Oh, yes, okay.
What's your take on him?
Well, here's the thing, and this is what the Bulls are free agency, and this goes back to what Adrian Wojnarowski said a few days ago. He said that he felt like the Bulls are going to be sneaky in free agency, and that lit up Bulls Twitter, as you know, about what that means, because the Bulls are going to have significant cap space. They're going to be one of the few teams with significant cap space. I mean, right now, I'm projecting them to have 24 or 25 million of cap space. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into that. Certainly about what you do with David Nwaba is going to play into that. And, you know, what you do with Levine, the Levine's cap hold. Like, Levine's cap hold is going to be a certain amount. I think it's
$9 million.
Yep. They're going to wait on Levine. So Levine is going to sign for more than $9 million. But there are things like the first draft, first pick, the seventh pick, rather, and the 22nd overall pick, what you do with that. They do have flexibility where they could create a max cap slot if they wanted to. If they felt like they were going to be major players for, I know this is polarizing, but if LeBron James came out of the blue, he's not going to, but if LeBron came out of the blue and said, I want to play in Chicago, they would be able to pretty easily create a cap space to sign LeBron. So they do have flexibility to do that. But what shocked me about what Wojnarowski said the other day about the Bulls being sneaky in free agency is I have felt all along that they are looking to the 2019 offseason next summer to be major players in free agency and not this summer in free agency. And they have all this cap space. I'm not certain they're going to use it, and I don't think they necessarily will. I think you might see a guy sign a high-dollar, low-year amount deal. Like,
yes.
I could see somebody signing two-year deal with a team option or just a one-year deal at 18 or 20 million to fill that cap space with possibly Pope. But I don't think they want to sign long-term deals other than Levine right now, given the free agent class next year being Klay Thompson being my number one target.
Amen.
That they want to have complete flexibility going into next summer.
So first of all, one of your statements here I just have to ask about. Why would it be at all, if LeBron said, I want to come to Chicago, why would that be controversial? You better make it happen. And if there's anybody in the Bulls organization or in Bulls Twitter who doesn't want him here, then pound sand. Are you kidding? They'd be the best team in the East.
Yes, the reality of that is, Fred, absolutely. But you and I both know there is a very vocal contingent of the Bulls fan base who absolutely loathes LeBron. Loads him, and that they are of the mindset, they don't care how good he is, that they would not want to see him play for this team. Now, I don't agree with that, and I think most rational Bulls fans would say if LeBron wants to come here, we'll pick him up at the O'Hare, and Benny the Bull could drive him to the United Center, and let's get him signed to a contract,
exactly.
Right? So, I think most rational fans would believe that. However, it would be polarizing to a certain extent if you said that, but the reality of the situation is LeBron, I don't think he's coming back to Cleveland. I think he's got a solid chance to go to Philadelphia. I think it's more likely he ends up in the Western Conference and ends up in Houston or L.A.
Yeah, I agree, too. Houston would be a nice spot, although today's news about Brian Colangelo stepping down, does make it potential that he could go to Philadelphia, and that would be a just horrific situation, especially if Bridges falls to the 76ers. That's my nightmare of all nightmares. And then they have basically three wings that can interchange on defensively, and one of them that hits a three very well in Bridges, and then also the big guy down low. So that would just make
Many people consider David Griffin the front runner to take over that Philadelphia job. Griffin has got a very good relationship with LeBron. And so, you know, I'm not saying the Sixers would hire him specifically just so he could get LeBron, because I think Griffin is a very good GM, and I think he will end up getting that job. But it's another wrinkle to consider. It's another piece of the puzzle that where I could see a situation in which Griffin goes to Philly, and that LeBron certainly gives them a meeting and ends up signing with Philadelphia, creating a super dynasty
in the Eastern Conference right there. I mean, you're right about the nightmare situation. Mikal Bridges going to Philly and LeBron going to Philly, the Bulls are in big time trouble. We want to see him go to the Western Conference. Please go to the West.
Yeah, go to Houston. Exactly.
Yeah, the Colangelo situation is so bizarre. You know, like, you go back a couple of years ago where the whole Kevin Durant burner account thing, when that went down,
yeah,
and it was more of like a funny ha-ha, what a goof Kevin Durant is. He's got three different accounts and is defending himself, and he got caught doing it, right? But this Colangelo thing, the way it's played out over the last few weeks, I mean, it's half train wreck and half like somebody tripping and falling and laughing at him. It's like, how in the world could they let this happen? And I read Colangelo's statement, and I don't believe it 100%. I do think he had knowledge that these tweets were going out. I just find it extremely hard to believe that his wife, who I saw the term that she's a ride-or-die wife, and I absolutely agree with that. There's no questioning the loyalty of Colangelo's wife in this situation, yes, right? She saw people attacking her husband on Twitter and wanted to defend him because she felt like the people attacking Colangelo didn't have the whole story. And she created these accounts because she wanted to say, you don't have the whole story. If you knew X, Y, and Z, you'd know that Brian made the right decision, right? And
yeah,
so there's no doubting her loyalty. But I can't for a second believe that she did this without him knowing about it. I just can't believe that.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. As this wrapped up, I kind of felt bad for him. Because I know situations where, you know, you can't control your wife. I do know situations. I've had friends that have had, you know, wives that I'm sure would have done the same thing. And maybe not even have told them. I mean, you know, just in athletic situations where they've talked behind other people's back. And, you know, I do can see where he might not have been aware of it. And in a way, I kind of feel bad for him, you know, because you can't control what your spouse does.
No, you can't.
I probably shouldn't have shared the stuff with him and kept, you know, some of it quiet. But, you know how it is. You're married, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm married. Got two kids. I mean, there's nothing like things happen here at work that I tell my wife about.
Yes.
With the understanding that my wife's not going to tweet about some inner workings at NBC Sports Chicago. She understands that. It's a situation where in Philadelphia, where for him to share some of that knowledge with her, he denies sharing it explicitly with her that she somehow found on her own, which again is pretty unbelievable. But the reality is that there was no other option for the Sixers. There was no other option. Whether you believe it was 100% the wife without Colangelo's knowledge and consent, it doesn't matter. The trust is completely gone, and they had to make a move. They had to get rid of him.
I think
he will have another high-level job in the league ever again.
No, I agree with you 100%. Everything you said is true. And it's kind of a sad situation because I think he did do a good job there. I do like some of the stuff he did. And I think it's underrated. All the guys who shoot underhand love to give credit to St. Inky. And I think that guy was one of the most incompetent morons ever. And I know people disagree with me.
You're not a St. Inky fan, huh?
No, I think he drafted Noel. It's unbelievable. Like, I bring it up, you know, in that Giannis draft. First of all, he trades Drew Holiday. He's a fantastic player. And what does he turn that into? Noel and Michael Carter-Williams. And
yeah,
in that same draft, Giannis was picked 15th. Everybody's like, well, everybody ahead of him he's the only guy who passed on him twice, number one. And number two, he took Okafor ahead of Porzingis, and all the defenders will blame it on ownership. Hey, I don't want to hear it. He's so brilliant, he's got to figure that stuff out, right? And Okafor, there were a lot of warning signs about him. Not a good free throw shooter, not particularly athletic. And for him to take him, you know, he's supposed to be so brilliant. When you look at all that was said and done and all the damage he caused for five straight years, what was left? He got lucky, and
Embiid was the
clear number one, though, until he got hurt. So he was the one guy that set expectations. Listen, we're gonna sit with this kid. We'll draft him at number three, and we're gonna wait on him. You know, to his credit, he got him, no doubt. But everybody else is all, he didn't draft Simmons. They got lucky to get Simmons. Everybody knew Simmons was going to be great. That was drafted by Colangelo because his team sucked again. You don't get credit for sucking because you passed on Porzingis and you passed on Giannis. You know what I mean? And then
you're absolutely right.
I don't believe in St. Inky, and I thought he was just a complete joke as a GM. But you know,
what that fan base went through through in the last 10 years.
Oh my God, I know.
To get to the point where they are now, I mean, it's because of, there's so much optimism there because of Embiid and because of Simmons, right?
Yes.
And only one of those guys is Hinkie. And they tanked and tanked and tanked and made a mockery of the league and trading away Drew Holiday so they could tank some more. And no, Hinkie made a lot of misses. And it just, you know, you just listed them. I don't get the love affair that they have, but, you know, they I'm sure there is someone in Philly who's the C. Red Fred equivalent who is, loves Hinkie and thinks the world of
him. Well, in fairness, the people who love him are the numbers guys, right? The guys that shoot underhand, the nerds that, hey, here's one of us that made it. Here's one of us that made it. That's who love him. You know, if you played basketball and you saw the just complete idiocy, none of the agents, none of the players loved him. Nobody wanted to sign there, you know. So, anyhow, I can't thank you enough for your time here. I got a few minutes left. I got a hard stop at 3 Central, but I got to finish up with this one. So assuming the Bulls get an answer at 3, you got Dunn at the 1, you got Levine at the 2, Laurie at the 3, let's say Lopez at the 5. Let's say they get a 3, if it's Mikal Bridges, or at the high end, if they sign LeBron or they sign Paul George. I think Paul George is everything that ails this team. If I'm GM, I pick up a phone call, say we'll give you a max deal, why don't you come here and we'll win titles. But let's say...
I like Paul George, yes. Let's say it's Mikal Bridges. Let's go on the low end. Let's say it's Mikal.
Mikal Bridges, poor man's Paul George, who I think has a Paul George ceiling. Let's say they get that. Now you got your team. What is that team? What do you think the ceiling for that team is next year? I mean, I have a saying. We had the 7 pick last year, 7 pick this year, 7 seed next year, and 7 title in 2020. Am I nuts?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I don't know about the 2020 thing, but I do think that if they draft Mikal Bridges and they stay relatively healthy next season, I do think they'll be playing meaningful basketball in March and April, and I do see them vying for a 7th or 8th spot. Absolutely, I think they'll be contending for a playoff spot next year. I know there are some people that believe they're still multiple seasons away from getting back to the postseason. I think this team's got too much talent, and part of it is because I'm so high on Zach LaVine. And I know he did not play well in the limited stretch he did this past season, but I think Lionel Levine is a dynamic player. And the one thing I have to see more from Fred Hoiberg on is he's got to play Levine and Markkanen in the high screening role. He's got to.
Absolutely.
Because you run that play, neither player is defendable in either situation, both from an athleticism standpoint as far as who's guarding them and a shooting standpoint. They're both really good shooters. And if you run that play more and develop those players more, they'll be a playoff team next year.
Kevin, I couldn't agree with you more. There was a small window of 3 games where the Bulls, I think, beat Miami at home in January. They beat Toronto when they had all these guys together, and LaVine had just come back. And then they played Golden State strong for 3 quarters, and Dunn falls on his face, and nothing was the same after that. I mean, they hardly played together. But I agree with you.
No, limited minutes together, and that's what the off season's for, and that's what training camp's for.
But I agree. I think people are really trying to sell way too low on LaVine, and I agree with everything you said. And that's a part of the reason I enjoy your work on Twitter, your work at Bulls Talk. It's all fantastic stuff. I encourage everybody to listen. Now, where can they find you, brother?
Well, they can certainly find us at NBCSportsChicago.com. I try to contribute to our Bulls articles as much as I could. I wrote a little thing the other day about their cap situation heading into this summer. And I'm on Twitter with Kevin_NBCS.
Can't thank you enough for your time, my man. You gave a full hour to Chicago Bullseye, and you are a treasured member of the Chicago Bulls community. Thanks again. It's an honor to have you on. And we'll talk again soon, my man.
Thank you, Fred.
Have a good one, brother.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. Here with the great Keith Franz. Keith, how you doing, brother?
Living it up. Countdown's almost down to 10.
Yeah, almost here. The big day's coming quickly, very, very fast. I don't know if you saw the poll I posted on Mo Bamba. Did you participate in that poll?
Oh, I left a final option of all at the same time.
All at the same time. Well, just to review, I posted out, Bamba shot 27.5% from three, 68% from the free throw line, and averaged 0.5 assists. For the Bomber lovers, what deficiency do you think he will overcome first in order to achieve NBA success? And what he overcame first, the winner was weak frame, which was 37%. Inability to shoot was 36. Questionable motor was 17. And inability to pass was 10%. So I'm glad we got that figured out.
Well, I will say the one that I think will come last will be the passing, but you're also not selecting a rim protector to facilitate your offense.
True, yeah, but I mean, in today's game.
True, but Wendell Carter Jr. had multiple assists to Marvin Bagley, so his stats look great. He's an amazing passer.
He's a much better passer. He's clearly got passing skills. I would say that's the most underrated aspect in the video I've watched of Carter, of his game. He's a very good passer, and that's the one thing. I mean, there's nothing that guy does bad. You know, everything he does is good to great. And I understand all the, you know, we've kind of talked at this ad nauseum. I understand everybody's in love with the measurements and the potential. But, you know, if you watch just based on the video, you'll come to a very different conclusion. Did you watch that game I told you to watch, the Bamba West Virginia game?
Yes, I did, and I rewatched the Duke video as well, and Bamba had a clutch block in that game.
Oh, my
right,
God.
Right in the Stop last the 30 presses. Seconds, he stuffed the hell out of Bagley into the fifth row.
Was that an overtime game?
It did go to overtime, and Bamba fouled out shortly after that, so they did end up losing in overtime.
Understood. So, but you felt better about the Duke game after watching it with the one block?
I felt a little better about the Duke game, yeah. The West Virginia game, that was just an onslaught of threes. They just demolished them from the perimeter.
Oh, he was terrible in that game. It wasn't. I'm just talking about any time he touched the ball. He had it in the post a few times, and it was awful. It was one of the worst. I mean, I might be. Everybody is entitled to a bad game, and I think maybe that's the game that is kind of affecting my opinion of him. But if anybody wants to watch what disturbs me about Bamba, go watch that game. He was absolutely terrible in every aspect of the game. Even defensively, I thought he was slow. I mean, he gave up a couple rebounds that I just thought were completely based on he's not strong enough. And, you know, I think that's what people should do, is go try find these guys at their worst. You know, like,
oh, I've done that for your boy Mikhail. I've seen him getting tossed around in the post by college players quite a bit. So,
What do you mean get tossed around in the post? Like trying to guard somebody in the post? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like trying to guard somebody
like
in the post.
Like a 6'9", 260 pounder? Is that what you mean?
Oh, like, no, I mean like a small forward. Like he's going to be seeing in the NBA that's 230 pounds, maybe. Just give him a little shoulder and he just.
Okay. Oh, we'll never come to agreement on this one. Let's talk about the finals a little bit. I mean, I'd like to get your opinion on how that went down with the sweep. Just your general impressions about the 4-0 sweep for the Warriors.
Well, like we talked about previously, I thought that game one was going to demoralize them just like it did to the Raptors, being that close to, you know, stealing a game in a series you're not supposed to win. And having that blow up in your face is just hard to overcome mentally. And LeBron kind of looked like he had the 1-2-3 Cancun approach to game four, because he only put up, I think it was 12 shots.
Yeah, that was an embarrassment. And I understand now he's got the broken hand and people wanted to talk about that, but he's clearly, you just saw the life and the love for the Cavs kind of just, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry, that hand thing was some BS.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, why do you think that? You think he was lying about
because
it?
Because they showed a video when he walked off the floor of him giving, you know, slapping, dapping handshakes all the way to the tunnel with his broken hand.
Oh, really?
So then he gets into the locker room and he puts on a cast and it's, yeah, I punched something after game one. I've been playing with a broken hand. Like, okay, Marcus Smart does it. We call that guy a dumbass. LeBron does it. It was just pure passion.
Yeah, I'd still take him on the Bulls, though. I had this debate with Doug Tunnels. I'd love to get your take on this. If the Bulls brought him on the team, I mean, you would feel that they're the likely win the East still?
Yeah, I mean, they win the East, and then you go back into rebuild mode 4 years from now once LeBron's done doing to our roster whatever he does and turning Lowry into Ryan Anderson. And I just
so you're not that was a, all right. You saw that other poll I put out. Assuming we sign one of the players below, what player would you prefer that the Bulls sign to a max deal? And I was shocked with the results. LeBron won with 46%, but I was shocked it wasn't higher. The other options were Klay Thompson in 2019 was 35, Jimmy Butler in 2019 was 10, and then Paul George finalized with 9. You agree with that? Or I mean, so you're saying you don't agree with LeBron?
I would not want LeBron. He gives me a distaste in his mouth, and I could not deal with his fan base coming to Chicago. I would not want that. The media and his LeBron stance really ruined LeBron for me in my own home. I love watching the man play. I got nothing but respect for him off the court. He's an even better example than he is on the court. I just don't like the media and the fan base that follows him from town to town. And I just don't want to be the team that stoops that low and is that desperate that, oh, we got to bring in 34-year-old LeBron to carry us for 3 or 4 years. I don't see it.
On the Luka Doncic, I got into a couple Twitter fights this past week about Luka. I'm not as high on him as some other people are. I know you're pretty high on him, right? You feel like, where would you rank him if... Not for the Bulls, just, I mean, out of the top three prospects in this draft. This is this question I'd like to hear you say. Well, who are your top three, regardless of the Bulls' fit? Who do you like best in this draft?
I think top three talent-wise, you have to go probably Ayton, Doncic, Bagley. Obviously, Bagley has defensive concerns, but the athleticism and the offense and all that kind of stuff, I think he has a lot of upside. He kind of reminds me of a backwards Anthony Davis, where AD was more defensive in college, and his offensive game grew. Kind of think we could see that out of Marvin Bagley once he bulks up, but he does have a short wingspan. But I'd probably go Ayton, Doncic, Bagley.
So I pointed out that I keep on hearing the Doncic people talk about what an accomplishment it was for him winning the MVP. And I looked at the MVP list for the EuroLeague for the last 10 years. Guys like Vasilis Spanoulis, Sergio Rodriguez, Nemahana, Bahalanga, Yabba Dabba Doo, all these guys are terrible. There's nobody who's good in this, in these picks. And, in the MVP, EuroLeague MVPs, there's one guy recognized, Milos Teodosic. I also obviously knew the other one was Andrei Kirilenko, but nobody great. Nobody fantastic, and I kind of pointed out that the SEC Player of the Year in the last 10 years had a greater correlation of NBA success. Guys like Anthony Davis, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Bobby Portis, Malik Monk. I mean, well, obviously Monk hasn't been great yet. Chandler Parsons, but better players, better NBA players. Do you disagree with my assertion, or do you think, hey, he does deserve some love for winning the EuroLeague MVP? For whatever that means.
I think the flaw in your assertion is a lot of the guys that you named, like Kirilenko, they're all older. They've either had their run at the NBA and they, couldn't make it at that level, and then they found themselves back in Europe. Him winning it at 19 years old in the fashion that he won it and how fast he's done it, especially initially coming off the bench for his team, I believe he did that throughout the season. I don't think you can take it away from him. A 19-year-old wins any MVP in any league, especially if it's the league that's considered second to the NBA, and most people will tell you it's a tougher league to play in than college.
I don't agree with that. Based on what? Like, who made that scientific prediction? Like, it's insanity to me. I don't even think it's close. Those players aren't anywhere near as good athletically.
In college, 80% of which never make the NBA. In Euro, you at least have players who have been in the NBA, are good enough, or grown men, they're seasoned. They play the similar style of basketball that has transitioned to the NBA. Their three-point line is further back. It's more physical. But then there's also people that say college is more physical than the NBA. So
I'd be willing to bet on any G League team if they were together long enough, like a lot of these Euro League teams were, would just take any Euro League team and just slap them up and down the court. I don't see talent. I'm just talking about talent-wise. I just watching the Euro League stuff, and I see the stuff he gets away with. He does a lot of step-back jumpers, a lot of this stuff that people are kind of glorifying. I don't see – he's not going to get away with that in the NBA. You know, like
– Harden gets away with it.
Who does?
Harden, all the time.
He's a much better athlete than this guy. Harden's an underrated athlete, I think, as far as quickness and ability to go to do things. And he's much stronger also, I'd say. Like, I don't see any similarities to Harden with this guy. I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean, but there's a lot of – to me, what he does best is the step-back jumper. That's his go-to move.
I don't know, everything offensively is skill. It's technical. It's hesitations. It's being unpredictable. But his greatest skill is as a playmaker, and that's the way that the league's moving. If we could have Dunn and Doncic, you know, Doncic is your two. Obviously, that kind of screws LaVine. But Doncic at your two with Dunn as, you know, an off-ball guard or even an on-ball, and they could switch, I think that would work. You look at somebody like Ben Simmons, who's a 6'8 point guard. That vision really helps the size and being able to see the whole floor and see what you can do better than somebody that's 6 foot tall. I think as a combo guard in the NBA, I think he's going to have great success as a playmaker and a scorer.
Okay. What about the Bulls here now? There's a lot of rumor about this deal potentially with Denver. Are you on board with that also?
I am 100% on board with that.
For the audience, let's go over a little bit of it. What's the situation? Give us the specifics.
Ultimately, Denver has Fareed. Next year is the last year of his contract. He makes a little over $13 million. They are over the cap. They could be looking to re-sign Will Barton as well as give Jokic his extension this offseason. And if they were to do both of those things, they'd be paying a heavy, heavy, heavy salary tax. So the idea is Denver is looking to unload Fareed. They've been looking to do that since the trade deadline last year when the Bulls and the Pacers both showed some interest in taking that on for the pick. Obviously, Denver probably wanted to see where their pick was going to be before they gave it away, so they held off. But essentially, the Bulls would have to send $5 million in salaries, which Justin Holiday's contract works perfect for. They could send Holiday for Fareed and the 22nd for the 14th. And what essentially that would be the Bulls would be paying $8 million in cap to move up 8 spots. I think that makes sense. I think it would be a more situational trade depending on who's still available at 14. But I would much rather use the cap this year in a way that gets us a second high-end pick that could even end up being Kevin Knox or a Miles Bridges that falls out of, you know, the top 10 area there. And then we could potentially walk away with, you know, an elite big, whether that's Wendell Carter or Bamba or Jaren Jackson, with our own pick. And then at 14, steal one of the top three wings, whether that's Miles, Knox, or McHale that's there. Those are all great options as well.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's something I would absolutely be interested in. Although I'd hate to give up Holiday. I mean, is there any other options you could look at on the squad that would make that work?
We could potentially send Portis and Grant, and maybe try not to send the 22nd. And then you send Portis and Grant for the 14. Then they could waive Jerian. And they still save the money that they need, and they could reopen that roster spot by getting rid of Jerian.
So, I was debating this also with Doug. I'd like to get your opinion on it, which is, would you be for the Bulls doing what the Sixers essentially did? The Sixers, I don't believe, had any idea that they'd win a title or compete for it this year, which they obviously didn't, even with all the talent that they do have. So they signed J.J. Redick to a 22. They overpay for him, basically. Would you be up for overpaying for a guy like Pope? Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for 1 year, a one-year deal, in order to make the team better and make the playoffs and get these young guys playoff experience, or would you prefer to just keep the powder keg dry and maybe potentially be a lottery team again one more year?
I think a lot of that depends on the draft. I do think that those are the kind of deals that they should look at, whether it's a Pope or even just overpay Ariza to come for a year, or overpay Vince Carter, who probably is going to retire after this year, but he did something similar for the Kings last year. Obviously, we need wing depth. If we landed Miles Bridges by trading up to 14 and had Vince Carter as his veteran, you know, presence, I think that would be awesome. So I think a deal like that is what the Bulls should be looking at, nothing long-term, either a big one-year deal that fills out the cap for a, you know, veteran playoff player that's going to help the team progress there, or even just a character vet to add to Rolo to keep this team's mindset in the right place throughout the season.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a tough call. That is a tough call, because I do think there is a tremendous amount of value in these guys getting young, you know, getting our young players getting playoff time. A lot of it depends on, you know, how good you kind of feel this team is right now, and I'm one of those people that think we have what it takes to win with the team is currently constituted and whatever this draft pick is. So I'd be fine with paying some money as opposed to, you know, just, you know, taking on somebody else's dirty laundry, unless it's going to get you a draft pick or something like that that's significantly high enough. If it's two second-rounders, tell them to pound sand.
No, yeah, I agree there. I do feel that even as the team is currently constructed in the East, that they would have to try at the second half of the season to miss the playoffs again. I do think we're going to be, you know, right in the hunt for the 7-8 spot, regardless of what we do in the draft and free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's blind faith. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into the flashes that we've seen from Dunn, LaVine, and Lowry. But I truly think that, at least in the East, this team definitely has the potential to make the playoffs as is.
If, you know, barring any... So a lot of issues on Twitter this past week about the Bulls sitting out the Euro pick. A lot of anger about it. What was your take on that, and could you give a little 411 on what the situation was?
Ultimately, the league, the NBA, took over what used to be done by Adidas because of all their endorsement issues and the FBI investigation. They pretty much said, hey, we're not going to do this year. So the NBA picked it up last minute and ultimately held a Euro camp for players anywhere from 15 to 21, similar to the draft combine that the NBA had for the college prospects. And the Bulls were the only team that did not participate. Anybody who knows of Ivanka Dukin, the Bulls international scout, knows that the Bulls have been scouting Europe longer than most of these teams. They invest more money and more time into doing so than a lot of the other teams. And they had prospects in that they wanted to heavily scout. So they put the faith in their director. He said, hey, we really don't need to be here. And they didn't pay the $10,000 fee. Now they could still pay the $10,000 fee and get the film and the medicals and all that stuff. But if you're talking about 15-year-old kids that you're concerned about scouting, they're going to be there next year. They ain't coming to the NBA anytime soon. And I don't think the fan base would have been very thrilled with a Euro stash at 22nd anyway.
Yeah, wow. And so it made such another excuse for people just to bag on the Bulls, you know, and being cheap and maybe sell it to some degree. But do you know what the reasoning was for not participating in this?
From what I gathered, it was they set this up to catch all the other teams up. The Bulls had already done their due diligence in Europe, and ultimately they just didn't feel the need to go. And I suppose for $10,000, which is probably like a penny to them, to save optics and avoid this whole, you know, outrage over nobody being there and refusing to pay $10,000 being blown into, oh, Jerry Reinsdorf's just cheap again. They probably could have gone, but I think that they are heavily invested and focused in this draft. This draft is just as important as last year. They hit this pick, and we're set up for a long time. They missed this pick, and we could be doing this again in the near future.
Amen. All right, brother. Hey, man, great stuff as usual. Got a little bit of a abbreviated cast today, but appreciate the input. Next week, we're going to get a lot more into the draft as we're approaching the D-Day, And looking forward to getting chatting again next week. A couple other players I'll send you that I want to discuss, and specifically that might be available around there at 22. So all the best to you, my man. Have a good week, brother.
Yep, have a good week, boss.
Bye-bye.